You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Drs. Haley Mueller and Caitlin Jackaway about their experiences with the USDA Rural Veterinary Services Grant Program. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Dr. Mueller grew up in Overbrook, Kansas, where she was active in 4-H throughout her youth. After earning a bachelor's degree in animal sciences and industry, with minors in entrepreneurship and biology from Kansas State University in 2014, she entered veterinary school at KSU and graduated in 2018. She began her career as an associate at a mixed animal practice in southeast Kansas after graduation, and after 2 years formed her own ambulatory mixed animal practice. The practice has a new clinic building in progress where she and her team will see all species. When she's not working, Dr. Mueller enjoys hiking and kayaking, gardening, running, shotgun sports, and fostering and adopting sighthounds. Dr. Jackaway grew up in Schoharie, New York. She started riding horses when she was 8 years old, and as a youth showed sheep in 4-H and FFA, and competed in Horse Quiz Bowl and Hippology. She competed at the National 4-H Eastern States Roundup in 2012 for the Horse Quiz Bowl. She attended Murray State University in Murray, Kentucky, followed by earning her DVM at the Lincoln Memorial University College of Veterinary Medicine in Tennessee, where she also completed large animal emergency rescue training while at school. When not working, you can find her outdoors enjoying the mountains. She also enjoys baking, cooking, and photography. Welcome, Drs. Mueller and Jackaway. The purpose of the Veterinary Services Grant Program, also known as VSGP, is to relieve veterinarian shortage situations and support veterinary services. The Rural Practice Enhancement, RPE, grants are for establishing or expanding veterinary practices by equipping veterinary offices, sharing in overhead costs, and or establishing mobile veterinary facilities. The Veterinary Medicine Loan Repayment Program, there's lots of acronyms here, this one is VMLRP, for 2026 works by offering up to $120,000 in student loan repayment with a tax offset for veterinarians who commit to 3 years of service in designated food animal or public health shortage areas to booster and bolster food security and animal health infrastructure. And I was really surprised to see that 47 states have rural areas that are considered in need, some of the counties in 47 states. Wow. Dr. Mueller, you received a Rural Practice Enhancement Grant. What can you tell our listeners about that process and how it helped your practice? I know it's a little intense and confusing sometimes, but so tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like intense and confusing are excellent adjectives. But it's well worth the effort, I will say. So I first heard about the grant through a colleague that's another mixed animal veterinarian within my region. And she had received it and strongly encouraged me to apply. And the whole application process, to be completely honest, is quite daunting. But like I mentioned, it is worth it. And then you continue to report on the grant for 3 years after receiving the funding, and you have 3 years to use the funding. It tends to be, more geared towards mixed animal or food animal practice, but it does include equine, which is a large portion of my practice. For me, being a new practice startup and a fairly recent graduate, it was monumental. I was able to use the grant funds to purchase a new vet truck and a vet box to go in said truck, as well as some equipment, the main piece of equipment being a portable tilt hydraulic cattle chute, which is very imperative for a young, small-framed female in mixed animal practice. For those of you that don't know me, obviously this is a podcast, you can't see me, but I am 5'3", and I'm about 130 pounds dripping wet. So working with large animals is different for people of my stature. And with the veterinary industry being female dominated, we do have to pay attention to the equipment that we use and how we work and how gentle we are or are not to our bodies in order for us to be able to do this career, not only now, but 4 years from now. And so being financially fit and safe to be able to practice and maintain a business is important. So this grant was monumental in many ways, both in financial and safety stability, really, for me. I applied for the grant. It took me a substantial amount of time. My complete application was around 32, 33 pages. It is a federal grant, so there are a lot of hoops that you have to jump through, a lot of different numbers, a lot of different codes. So those of you that are interested in applying for this grant, I would say definitely don't procrastinate. I started working on my application about 4 months before the due date. So I felt rushed at the end still, even with that. So there is a lot of prep work. There's a lot of thought. There's a lot of numbers and research, and rightfully so, for someone to be, you know, using taxpayer funding. I think that it's a daunting process, but it's not unwarranted, in my opinion. So whenever I received the grant, the funds were just released to me, and I had to provide documentation of how I used the funds and how they were being utilized to support my area, my clients, and my business. As I mentioned again, it was very, very monumental for me in many ways, and it helped expand my practice, my capabilities, my efficiency, and more importantly, my safety, which was huge for me.
So what kind of dollar figures are we talking about? What do you ask them for, a particular amount based on what you want to get for your practice, or how does that work?
Yes. So you can ask for particular amounts, and I asked for the maximum, which was $125,000. And I did receive all $125,000, which you hear that and you think, wow, that's a lot of money. But with the prices of trucks and equipment, it went by very quickly.
It was gone very fast.
Yeah, it left about as quickly as it came, if not quicker. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of it, right? So I chose to utilize it. You can choose to utilize it for staff, for salary, or you can choose to utilize it for equipment. It cannot be used for physical, like, buildings. It can only be equipment. And so I chose to use it for equipment because for a recent grad in a new practice, it's pretty daunting to, you know, buy a vet truck that's large enough to pull a 6,000 to 7,000 pound cattle chute and a box to go in it. And as practitioners, we all know how much these things cost. But in case anyone's listening that's not a veterinary practitioner, you know, the vet box itself is around 20,000. The truck, you know, around 65,000 to 70,000. And then there's the cattle chute. So all of these things that are necessary to do my job safely and efficiently cost a lot of money. And oftentimes I see young practice owners, whether they be strictly equine or mixed animal, they will sacrifice safety for the money because they can't afford these things. And I was one of those people. To do a quick backstory, before I got this grant, I was one of the young gunners that would just figure out a way to make about anything work. And before I purchased portable equine stocks, I was ultrasounding mares, not in stocks. I learned my lesson the hard way that is not a good idea. There was a mare that I had done repro work for 3 years in a row, never had any issues, used the exact same sedation protocol. However, it was fine until it wasn't. And 1 year I was ultrasounding her, and this was about 3 years ago now, I was ultrasounding her reached in, got onto her right ovary, and there was a painful cyst on that ovary. And even though she was sedated and adequately sedated for any general ultrasound, I got onto a cyst that was painful and she kicked me. And I ruptured my spleen and I had some bleeding on one of my kidneys and I was life flighted. That was a major wake-up call for me. And I started looking into resources. How can I get more equipment? How can I make this safer? How can I make this sustainable? Because, you know, I can't take another hit like that physically or financially, because that was a lot of medical bills. So that's when I started. That's when I started looking into the grant. And I feel like it's not advertised as well as it should be. And I was lucky to have a colleague that said, hey, you should really look into this. So I think the Rural Practice Enhancement Grant is honestly one of the best kept secrets of VetMed. And so it is designed for the little guys, the non-corporate practice owners that, you know, getting this equipment truly can be a make or break situation.
Yeah. Do you have to report like sort of regularly, since it's a, you should be taking care of some food animals or other, like, you know, like, do you have to give them some figures about how, what your patients are, what species and stuff like that?
Yes. So on the back end, it is a lot more data tracking, but it's actually pretty easy. My practice management software does it for me. I just have it set up. So I keep track of how many miles I put on the truck, which I charge mileage anyway. I keep track of how many new clients I'm gaining because of the equipment. I keep track of, you know, like usage of the cattle chute. I keep track of how many students ride along with me. Like there's so many things that encompass this grant. And so it's not just me. It's like, how am I able to show students this equipment, how to spread, you know, knowledge of the safe practice of veterinary medicine in an ambulatory nature for equine and food animal. So I keep track of a lot of data, but I am a numbers person anyway.
A lot of data points, right?
Yeah. There is annual reporting, and the annual reporting is actually coming up. It's due February 1st. So I've been working on that. But really, honestly, considering the amount of money and the value it adds, it's really not bad. And that's data that as a practice owner, you probably should be tracking anyway.
Excellent.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
Dr. Jackaway, you received a veterinary medicine loan repayment program grant in 2024. So tell us how this program works. And like, if you get one and the time goes by, you get do your 3 years, can you get another one? Tell us all about it, because that's pretty cool.
So this is a program also through the USDA. It opens up in January, but what I would recommend if somebody was interested, look to see if your area is considered underserved first, because that's going to kind of determine whether or not you're eligible. So look to see if your area is considered underserviced. If it's not, get a hold of your state vet. If you can have a reason why you can think it's underserved, you can usually talk to them and they will label it as an underserved area. And there's 3 types of classifications. So the type 1, type 2, and type 3. Type 1 is food animal, and I think it's 70% full-time versus the type 2, which is food animal 30% of the time, versus I think type 3 is a public shortage where you might be asked to work in like a diagnostics lab, or something along those lines. So first just determine like if you're considered under shortage situation, and then what type you are. And so the application opens up in January. Usually you reach out to somebody, they'll have a specific email and they'll send you the application. The application itself, it's not terrible. It's really redundant. So you have to get all of your loans, every single student loan that you have, both undergrad, graduate school, vet school. If you went into a master's program, you have to get all that information. and you have to get it from the federal government website as well as the individual loans themselves, like the companies. So unfortunately for me, all of my stuff is through Nelnet. So I literally just had to print out the form. So I had to print those forms out a couple times. And then there is an essay. So the essay itself, I think, is 4 to 5 pages long. And it's basically you explaining how you're going to serve the area, what your plans are, because it's not only fulfilling like the food animal aspect, but also they want to see like, are you going to try to engage with the cooperative extension? Are you going to try to interact with 4-H'ers? What are you going to do to, I guess, kind of establish yourself, one, as a veterinarian and a person, but then also kind of, I wouldn't say give back to the community necessarily, but they want to see that you're going to try to do something besides just go to work every day. So you have the essay, the loan information. They will make you fill out a map. Luckily, if you are on the edge of a state, I know in Idaho, they have a couple of underserved areas where it's Idaho and Washington or Idaho and Oregon. So if you do have areas where you cross over into different states, they can make you that area underserved as well. So that's kind of cool. So once you fill out your application, you also have to get references. So I had to get 3 references. Two of them were my bosses saying that, yes, I work for them. I have a job here. I will be doing food animal. And then the third one can be whatever you want. We had another coworker who has been a longtime technician, and she's pretty involved with the community. So she was my 3rd reference. And then I think there was another part. I think the other part was just your basic contact information. But all the other, there's about 3 parts of the application. And then your map. So altogether, I think my application was 65 pages, but most of that is the PDF from the loan. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I printed out the loan information, and it's literally just the same things over and over again, but in a different format. And unfortunately, they require it, but it's just a lot of redundant paperwork. So then you submit everything. They do have when I did it, they had a company that would actually go through and read your essay and like try to explain to you like, all right, maybe let's work this a little bit, or like, how does this fit in to what you're trying to do? And so that was really helpful. You submit the application, and then I found out, I think either end of August or in September, that I got it. And then they have the webinars for everybody just to kind of go over everything. And so if you apply in 2026, you won't see anything until 2027, because then everything starts in January of 2027, as far as like the awards and all that. In order to get my award, it pays out quarterly. So every quarter I have to sign a form saying that, yes, I am doing my 30% full-time hours. They haven't asked for hours yet, but I do have an Excel sheet that they use as a template that I have been recording. And things that include hours is obviously working on food animals, the drive time, if you have to call people about blood work. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to get this? But when you spend an hour in the truck driving to a call, it adds up. So then every 3 months you just sign off saying that, yes, I have been doing this. So as far as reapplying, as long as I have student loan debt, I can continue to apply. So it has to be student loan debt through vet school. So any undergraduate loan debt or student loan debt for non-DVM school stuff will not qualify. So that's kind of the, I guess, biggest caveat is if you have a bunch of loans from undergrad, they don't count. But I think it's been helpful.
I'm sure. It sounds really helpful. So when I read that little paragraph from the website, and it said there's a tax offset. Those monies you receive that go against your loans, are they paying your loans directly, or does the money go through you and then you pay your loans, and the tax offset you just get to like write it off on your taxes, or somehow, how does that work?
So they pay the loans directly. I think it's through some clearinghouse publisher or something. Mm-hmm. So it goes through them directly. I don't touch any of that money. As far as the taxes go, that comes directly to me into my bank account. And it's funny because it happened Christmas Day. Christmas Day, I got that money. I turned around, went to the IRS website, put that exact amount from what they distributed to the IRS, and then sent the screenshot to the Zoom box that they use, explaining that, yep, I paid my taxes. And then that's how they release the quarter 4 funds.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't ask that same question to you, Dr. Mueller. Is there any tax, anything about taxes with your grant?
No, with it being a grant, really it had no effect on me tax-wise, which is really nice. I had no negative implications and no positive ones, but as far as like the tax part of it, it pretty much just had no effect, which was nice.
Yeah. So how has this financial help changed your life, Dr. Mueller?
Well, I kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier. I jumped the gun some, but other than, you know, just trying to start a business in a pretty interesting economic time, because it was right after COVID, I'm actually in my second year of reporting for the grant, so I only report for one more year. It was huge in the sense that it freed me up to be able to hire more employees and staff appropriately, which was nice, because when you look at those dollar figures, I mean, $125,000, you know, that's a couple of technicians. And so, you know, I could have used that money to just, you know, have technicians and pay them. But I kind of did it strategically in a way that I got equipment that would help me make money for a longer period of time than just doing, you know, someone's salary for a year or two, whether that be an associate or a technician. So that's why I chose to utilize the funding for equipment rather than people, because I was looking at it from a long-term investment. And so since I have this equipment, I'm able to pay more people because I'm able to generate more revenue. So it's kind of like a gift I gave myself, you know, for years to come, because, you know, it's nice to have equipment to attract employees as well. So, you know, it really has been exponential as far as the economic impact. It's tough to say, you know, it's tough to put a true dollar figure on it.
That was a really strategic decision you made. Really, really well thought out, for sure. How about you, Dr. Jackaway? How has it changed your life?
So it's kind of interesting. So when I applied, the award amount was $75,000. And being straight up honest here, I have, when I started, $320,000 worth of student loan debt. And I think that's probably, I hate to say it's on the high end of average, but I feel like with schools and everything, that's kind of what a lot of us are dealing with now. And so at $75,000 every 3 years, doing the math, it comes down to about $2,000 a month. Initially, when I started out, I was on the same forbearance, so I was not accumulating interest. Come August, I'm accumulating $1,500 a month. So while it's only $500 a month in theory going towards my loans, it's taking off that interest. So like, instead of getting $1,500 in interest a month, that $2,000 is going towards the loans, taking out that $1,500 a month in interest and $500 on top of the loan. I think that I said that in a way that makes sense. And so that's been helpful because my loans aren't necessarily growing and they're actually getting smaller. And so I'm trying to, I guess, go from the backside and start paying off at the back end. And hopefully if I can continue to get the program kind of meet in the middle, doing the math, now that they're offering $120,000 for 3 years, that can come down to $3,300 a month, which if you're accumulating $1,500 a month in interest, that's now going to be $1,800 a month going towards your loans. So not only is it going to help a lot preventing the loans from getting bigger, but it's also going to hopefully help somebody by taking it out $1,800 a month, which would probably be more than what I would pay on an interest-based or income-based plan.
Right, right. Absolutely. That sounds like it's made a huge difference. So that's fabulous. For other people that are considering applying for either one of these programs, what do you see as the most important things to know about, Dr. Jackaway? For those that are looking for the student loan program, what should they be mostly thinking about?
First things, just make sure your area is considered a shortage. Because if you go in thinking, oh, I'm going to apply for it this year, and then you find out it's not a shortage, I'm not sure from like the state vet and the federal level if it's too late to add it or not, but that kind of slows you down. And then just getting all your paperwork in order. I think that's probably the most difficult and just frustrating thing is just trying to get all that loan information together. A lot of it is just really redundant. It's the same exact information from three different websites. And then once you got that, just kind of keeping track of your hours. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And if you can somehow expand, like doing community resource information things or reaching out to extensions, I think that helps. And then also if you reapply, from what I've been told, that is can be used to go on your application the next time. Like you have proof to say like, yep, this is what I did. This is what I'm going to continue to do. And so it actually looks like you're using the money the way it should be used and giving back in a way that you're supposed to be doing. So it's probably what I would recommend.
That's good advice. When I went on the website, it has a map and a map of the United States. And I found that if I clicked on a state, because I clicked on Montana, where I live, and it listed all the counties that were considered one of the need zones. And so I think it's pretty interactive now that people will be able to find that information pretty quickly about which ones are designated. So that's a pretty cool feature that you don't have to dig around too much. What about you, Dr. Mueller, with the grant? What is the most important thing to know, do you think?
Well, it's hard to choose just one, but I would say I'm going to echo making sure you're in an area of need first. I don't think I did a very good job of mentioning that earlier. It's very similar to the loan repayment program, to where you do have to be in a designated area of need. So that's step one. But there's a lot of areas of need. So if you're in a rural area and doing mixed animal practice, odds are you probably will qualify. But that would be hurdle number one, very similarly to the other program. And then the next thing I would say is do your homework, do your legwork, do research. If you could talk to a colleague that has been awarded the grant, look at their application and see what they did. That's what I did. But in my area, you know, looking into things that are a little bit outside the box, for example, I'm in southeastern Kansas right now, and we are actually having an upsurge of feral swine. And so talking about African swine fever and disease transmission through feral swine and concern through biosecurity, and there not being very many veterinarians in this area, was another thing. So there's so many different moving parts to vet med that I feel like we all like to get in our own little boxes and not think outside the box. And so do your research, think about, you know, what value do you add being a veterinarian in this area of need? What would it look like if you weren't there? What would be missing? So that's how I wrote my essay portion. And for me, talking about how can I interest people in being practice owners and going into veterinary medicine, whether that be a vet technician or a actual veterinarian. And so that's why I really value and keep track of how many students ride with me in the truck every year. And then I include, you know, that information kind of similar to, you know, the community service and engagement metrics that we were just talking about earlier. So for me, I would say a lot of it is homework, but in a different way, not necessarily the loan paperwork homework, but just really, truly knowing your area. I think they can tell by your applications if you know your area and if you're likely to stay in your area or if you're just looking for a handout. So they have people that are actually, you know, current practicing veterinarians that help review these applications. And I've actually been asked if I'd be willing to be on a review panel, and I did say yes. So I will be on the flip side in the near future. But there are actual practicing veterinarians that look at these applications, and like most of us can, I'm sure they can tell, you know, what's real and what's maybe not real or a little bit fluffed up. And so being honest and doing your homework, I think, is probably the biggest advice.
That's great advice. That's really, really good. Good that you're sharing that. As we close, is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners, Dr. Mueller?
I would say don't be afraid of the work. It is daunting to apply. And as a practice owner and a solo veterinarian, the excuse "I don't have the time" is a common thing that flies out of my mouth. That's a habit that I'm trying to break. But you just have to make the time and don't let the daunting application process scare you. If it were easy, everybody would be doing that, whether that be practicing vet med or getting the grant. And it's just a matter of, you know, thinking about the money, not only the dollar value at that time, but like I mentioned before, the exponential value of this equipment that will last way longer than the grant period for me.
Yes. What would you say, Dr. Jackaway? Anything else that you would like to add for our listeners?
I probably have to disagree more with Haley or Dr. Mueller. It is a lot of paperwork, but again, you're getting $120,000 towards your loans. And you're essentially getting paid to do a job that you're already doing. So I would just start early, make sure you check your boxes off, get your list and everything, paperwork and all that. And just know that I think probably the hardest part is the application. And from there, it's a lot easier. So once your application is done, it's a lot easier. So that's probably the biggest challenge. But yeah, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
There's a Nike has a saying, "Just do it." And that's, I think, what we should leave here thinking about. Just do it. Because when you look at the payout for the hours that you'll spend getting it, it's definitely, definitely worth it. Thank you both so much for joining us today. I think that the information that you've shared is going to affect and impact a lot of veterinarians, and that's important. So thanks for making a difference.
Absolutely. And I would just add, I know I mentioned looking over applications of someone who has received the grant before. If anyone out there is listening and they're thinking of applying and they would like to see my application, I am happy to share that. So get in contact with me and I am happy to provide that with me potentially being on a review panel. I don't know how much I could review an application for someone, but I'm happy to provide information from mine.
Thank you so much. And a big thank you to all our listeners for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change, and just do it.